All right, this is part two of the two-part series that we're doing on how I bought $4 million real estate in 2022, bringing us to $10 million in total. And if you liked part one and you actually want to see like visuals and you want to see like more compact version of this, like if you actually go onto YouTube at Logan Lee Mazzanares, you actually can watch this video on YouTube. But if you're ready for part two, let's dive in. Welcome to the Everything Goes My Way podcast with your host, Logan Manzanares.
So, with all that being said, I'm ready to share with you guys now the seven techniques I use in 2022. So, who's ready? Who's ready for this? Again, now I'm watching the chat a little bit. Who's ready to actually see these seven different techniques? And one of them is the one that I get the most attention on, and that's the Morty method. And I've actually done it 3 times. And so I'll share with you how I've done that. And I've done it 3 different ways as well. So I know you guys want to hear that for sure, but there's actually different ways that you guys, you guys have seen before, but I think it's important just to show the little nuances, because sometimes the nuances is what makes the difference in whether you have the belief or whether you can see a deal through a different lens. So, you guys excited? You guys ready to rock and roll? Alrighty, let's do it, kids. Okay. So, let's do it. So I'm gonna give you guys a couple bonuses. So it's okay if I over deliver. So I'm gonna share with you 2 ways that you can buy real estate not using your own cash that I've done in the past. I didn't use them this year per se to buy new properties, but I wanna give you guys a couple bonuses as well, because I feel like these were just so instrumental in helping me grow my portfolio that I wanted to actually share these with you guys. And so bonus number one, we actually used the HELOC this year. We didn't use it to buy a new property, but what we did is we did infill development on our current property, our current home. And so what we did is we added a garage with an ADU above it. And how we paid for that was I got a HELOC on our property. And so I went to the bank and I told them, hey, we have some equity in our property and we're getting ready to build this ADU. Like, is there any way I can get a HELOC? Okay. And so I went to... Well, first off, I emailed a bunch of credit unions. So I think a credit union is the best place to start. And I got all the different rates. And here is as simple as it is to set up a HELOC. It cost us less than $1,000 because all they wanted was an appraisal. And we had to pay for, there were like the fees was super, super small. The appraisal was the biggest thing. But for less than $1,000, we got a line of credit for $100,000. Okay. And so I think there's so many people that I talk to that they're like, yeah, I should get a HELOC, but I don't have one. I'm like, you don't pay for like that $100,000. You only pay on what you take out. And then when you take it out, you put it back. And then if you like replace it, all of a sudden it's just like it's a revolving line of credit. And it's literally like free money that costs you less than $1,000 to get your hands on. And so like, if you have equity in your home, go get a HELOC. I think it's just the most amazing, coolest tool ever. And you usually get the best rates on, even right now. I think we have like a 6.5% or 7% HELOC, but it's fixed rate. It locks in and it pays down, which is pretty cool. But the reason why I think this is important is because we got this HELOC set up in March because we were starting to build this garage ADU. And again, we got about $100,000 for our HELOC. Well, it ended up costing us $200,000 to actually build this garage ADU. So we had to come out of pocket about $100,000. But we got the appraisal, the initial appraisal in March, and it appraised for like $815,000 is what our home appraised for. And so then when the whole project was done, in I think this got done like September, October, like late September, early October. We're like, hey, like we don't want to like keep that $100,000 in the property. Like, I want to get $100,000 out. And so I went to the bank and said, hey, can we redo our HELOC? Because now we have more equity in there. And so they did another appraisal. And after we put that garage ADU up, our home went from $800,000 in March to $1.37 million in September, right? We gained over $500,000 equity. We only put $200,000 in. And so then once they gave us another $100,000 of that line of credit, again, we use that to actually pay ourselves back. And now we have no money into this garage ADU. It appreciated our home an additional $500,000. And it's a Airbnb, which brings in about $35,000 to $4,000 a month. And our HELOC payment on it is about $1,500, right? So you guys can do the math on that. It cash flows. So I want to share that story with you because you guys might have some hidden equity sitting in your home that you can have on a HELOC that, again, whether you use it on your primary residence or use it to buy something else, it's one of the greatest tools that most people just don't see. So that's bonus number one. Bonus number two is using a cash out refinance. And so again, we didn't use any of those this year, but previous years, we've pulled out over $420,000. That's actually one of the biggest ways how we were able to accelerate our growth before I learned about how to use other people's money is we just bought properties that appreciated and we were able to pull $421,000 out. And so I showed you guys that earlier example of where we had about $1.1 million, I believe, our own money in there. And so to date, we've been able to pull $420,000 out and we've literally taken all that money. We put it back into different properties. And so some of these we have no cost basis. Some of these we still have a little bit of cost basis into them. You can see there's a couple properties. We still have a ton of cash in that we were supposed to rip out the beginning of this year, but the way that interest rates turned out, we decided just to sit on that money a little bit longer. But one of the other hidden ways to buy money, to buy real estate with no money, is to use existing properties to do cash refinances and use that the cash that you get out to go buy more properties with. So that's bonus number two. And here's the coolest part about doing cash refinances. Your tax basis on your cash refinance is zero, right? I think that's really important because like we could sell these properties, but then we have to pay taxes on it. We have to pay capital gains on it, or we could 1031 it. But then again, it's just a process to go through. But if you do a cash refinance, you literally get that money. It gets put in your bank account and you pay zero tax on it because it's technically debt. It's not income. So that's bonus number two, cash out refinance. Another amazing strategy to buy homes with no money. Cool. So those are two bonuses. Are those valuable? Are you guys getting value from this? Again, my goal is just to share with you guys what I've done. I'm not saying that this is the best way. I'm not showing it's the right way. I want to share with you guys what I've done, and hopefully you guys can take some of this and utilize it in your situation. That is really my goal here. So let's talk about these seven different strategies. Okay. And so I'm going to walk you through all the properties we bought in 2022. I'm going to show you guys different strategies we used and some of them are combinations. Again, at this point, nothing I would say is too crazy, but sometimes it's like putting these things together that make it creative in the end. So the first property we bought in 2022 was a commercial live work building here in Bozeman. And you can see down here, we bought it for $645,000. This one, we used three different strategies, right? We actually have an equity partner who put half the down payment down. Okay. For our half of the down payment, we use a private money lender who gave us $40,000. And then we use the HELOC. Now, here's something really cool. And again, I hesitate to share this with you because the chances of you being able to get a HELOC on investment property is slim. But on one of my properties, I do have a second or a line of credit on one of my other investment properties. So this is not my primary residence. On another property that we bought, I have a $100,000 line of credit. And the reason I was able to get that is because I have a relationship with this bank. And that's pretty much it, right? I have a relationship with the bank and I use that line of credit in order to buy this property, along with using a private money lender who gave us another $40,000 to put the down payment down on this property. And so that's how we got into the property from a funding standpoint. I was the one who found the deal. My equity partner is the one who actually got the financing on the deal. And we are the ones who currently manage this deal. So I think it's also important to understand that in every single deal, there's always four components that every single deal must have in order for it to get across the finish line. Okay. There you have a deal finder, you have somebody who's got to get the financing on the deal, and you have to get the funding on the deal, and you have to have someone who's going to manage the deal. Okay. And so as I walk through this process, I'll show you which pieces of the process that we're involved in. And that way you can start to see that there's more ways to get into a deal rather than just raising money or just having money, right? You can just be the deal finder. You can just be the financer. You can just be someone who's a manager. And I actually have done all of these things. And I've actually done one deal where I've done none of these things. So that's my favorite deal. But this is deal number one. This was our first purchase of the year, $645,000. Okay. The second strategy that we used was an equity partnership plus a debt partnership. So this property we bought for $100,000, and this one was brought to me by another sub-2 student, and our renovation budget on this one is $100,000. Okay. And so I got the financing on it. This one's actually through my investor loan. And so we got 90% loan to purchase, and we got 100% of the renovation budget, which meant that we had to come up with about $20,000. And so I ended up raising $30,000 from another sub two student. And so this property is actually still under construction. This one's been under construction for a while. You can see it's a big budget, but basically the scope of work on this one was that we took a single family home and we turned it into two units. We had to redo the single family home altogether. And we turned a garage into the second unit. And so we're about 60 days away from finishing the second unit. The first unit is now done. And so after all said and done, this would be worth about $350,000. But for the sake of this presentation, I'm just showing the purchase price on it because it's not done yet. But on this specific example, like, I was responsible for the financing. I got the loan, and then we raised the money, and my equity partner on this is the one who's actually managing the deal, and he's the one who found the deal. So there's a second type of way that the second strategy that we used to buy this property. This one is in Billings, Montana. Okay. This one is the same. This is a different deal, but it's the same strategy. That's why you don't see number three next to it. So if you're confused out there, it's the same strategy. It is a different property. So this one is with actually the same equity partner. So this is the same partner. We bought it for $238,000. It was actually worth $328,000. My partner did an amazing job in negotiating. Like, it was an amazing deal. Like, it was turnkey. Like, the person who was selling it just, they just didn't really know what was going on. I think we only spent like $5,000 or $10,000 in renovation. So I didn't even put it on there. And so my role in this whole thing was just getting the financing. So I got the loan on it, another one through my investor loan. And then I found the private money. And so on this one, we raised the money from somebody in my investor club group, like local Bozeman Custom Group. He used his IRA, and he put the $9,000 in there, and it was great. So again, my equity partner found the deal. The money came from a member of my local investor club, and my partner is also one who managed it. So again, we just were responsible for the financing. So now we're up to over $1 million in 2022, and let's keep going. So next property. So this is a different strategy. This is strategy number three. So some of you guys might know this, but we are actually on our way down to Arizona. We're moving down to Arizona in less than a month. So if you guys are down in Arizona, let's hang out. Let's have some fun. Let's get out of the snow. Right now I'm like sitting in 2 feet of snow. It's freezing cold outside. And we're like, we're ready to be down in Arizona. And so this home we bought with primary home financing. Okay. And so we are calling this a house hack because this property, it has a 3-bedroom, 2-bath main home. And then it also has a casita or a guest house as well. And so we bought it for $575,000. It was actually appraised at $509,000. So we came into it with a little bit of equity. We only put 5% down because we came in as a primary home with primary home terms. And then we actually raised $40,000 as a way for our entry fee into this deal as well. And so with this deal, I actually found the deal and I brought it to Laura Morby. So Laura was the one who actually helped us close this deal. She was our real estate agent. She represented us, amazing human being. And she is so freaking smart and so easy to work with, and just appreciate her so much. So again, this is where all these connections start to come into play. So I found the deal. Laura helped us get to the finish line. I got the financing. We brought in a private money lender. So this was somebody who was a fellow gym owner with me. And he was sitting on some cash and he wants to put his money to work, but he didn't want to get in the game of real estate. Like, it wasn't his game. He didn't want it to be his active game. He just had some money, wanted to put it to work, wanted to earn a nice return on it. And so he decided he wanted to be a lender on this property. And then we are managing it from afar. So my wife, Katie, is the one who's managing this. And so we have the main house. That's an Airbnb while we're not down there. The guest house is an Airbnb as well. And if you guys have been following me, we also put an RV in there. In the beginning, it was one of our fellow sub two students named Daryl was living in this RV. And now he's passed the torch on to another sub two student named Nick, who's now living in this RV. And so if anybody wants to move to Arizona, I have an RV for you that it'll be a rolling, it'll be a rolling wheel of people who want to move down to Arizona and you need a place to get your feet on the ground for a couple months. Like, I got an RV sitting for you. So that is strategy number three. Hopefully you guys are liking what you're seeing so far. Again, I'm not watching the chat. I'm just trying to focus right here on the presentation, but if you like it, I can kind of see the corner of my eyes. So if you guys are getting some value, let me know. Okay, here we go. Morty method. So this was my first Morty method deal. And this one, I actually did a presentation with Pace. So me and Pace did a private Zoom probably 4 or 5 months ago on this one method deal. But this one was in Billings, Montana, and the purchase price on this one was $220,000. Ended up appraising for $225,000. And so the deal on this one was, this was actually brought to me by another sub-2 student who owned this property, and he wanted to get out of it, right? And I was like, hey, like, I'll buy from you, but like, I don't want to put any money down. And so our deal was that whatever it cost me to get in the deal from the lender standpoint, he would basically refund that back to me. And we would put it in second, we would put it as a second position lien against property that I would pay him back at 0% interest. And we started out with a 1-year note with the intention that I could continue to renew it as long as I made my payments on time. And so I don't remember the exact numbers on this, but whatever 220 is by 20%, right, is going to be like $40,000 or $50,000. I think it was probably like 50,000. No, it was. It was $40,000. That's how much it was. I had to put down $40,000 all in to get into the deal. And then at the end of, once the deal closed, I was refunded this $40,000. And then we put a, then after everything closed, then we put a note, a second position lien against the property. And he gets $150 every single month. And every single dollar that goes towards $150 pays the principal down. And so I found the deal. I financed the deal. This one is also through my investor loan as well. Again, the funding was actually funded by the seller, and then we managed the deal as well. And so this property is a short-term rental slash a corporate rental in Billings, Montana. So again, I did a Zoom with Pace on that one. You can kind of see some of our stuff on YouTube if you want to go check that deal out. But that was my first mortgage method deal. And at this point, it puts us at about $1.88 million for 2022 so far. All right, let's talk about the fifth strategy, owner financing plus debt partnership. And so this one was brought to me by, you probably guessed it, another, I forgot to put in here, this is also equity partnership as well. Another sub-2 student brought this to me as well. And so this one we bought for $156,000. And my partner on this deal, he negotiated a 10% down, 0% interest to the seller deal. And so our down payment on this was like $18,000. And then we obviously had to raise money for furniture and a little bit of lipstick on it because we turned into an Airbnb. And so I raised $40,000 from another gym owner or from one of my previous, like the same gym owner I raised money from in the previous deal. He had another $40,000 that we put against this property. And so this deal we got into again with none of our own money because we used the seller as a way to get a 0% down. And then we used a private money lender to get our entry fee into the deal. Someone else found the deal and we are managing the deal from afar. So this deal is actually in Ohio and my wife manages this property and it's insane. So our monthly payment on this property to our seller is like $350. And this thing's been averaging like $3,000, $4,000 a month. And man, it's just like, it's going to be a great property. The reason why it's been a little struggle up to this point is that we just had a lot of fix a lot of little things. So it's an older property. And so we had to fix a lot of things. We had some plumbing issues that we kind of came into when we first started. But once we get out of the these little nuances, like this thing is going to be a cash cow. So another type of strategy, owner financing plus debt partnership plus equity. And I forgot to put that on because we do have an equity partner. The person who brought us the deal became equity partner on this. So now we're up to $2 million in 2022. All right, next property, equity partnership, right? This is a straight equity partnership. This is actually something I learned from Chris Crum. And this actually is my favorite deal of all. If you guys are watching the video here, you guys can see at the very bottom, at the right, you'll see no green things next to deal financing, funding, or management. And so this deal was brought to me by another sub-2 student. They already had financing in place. They were just looking for funding and we already had management in place as well. And so I found the private money on this and we actually, instead of making private money, they actually are equity partner on this deal. And this one is like my favorite deal because I didn't have to do the financing of the deal. I didn't find the deal. I didn't bring the money to the deal. I'm not managing the deal. And we are equity partner on this deal. And so we bought $410,000 and it's worth $410,000. pretty simple deal. It's an Airbnb over in Saratoga Springs, New York. And so this is a one of fair deals because it shows you the power of true creative finance, of that if you just understand how to piece all these things together, you can get yourself a piece of the pie without actually having your hand in any of these four areas. So think about this. If you could just piece a deal together by putting the deal with the financing, with the funding, with the managing, and you got a piece of equity, like how many deals could you buy? Think about that, right? So this is my favorite. This is number six strategy, is just doing equity partnership. Now I'm going to show you a different equity partnership that we did. And so this one, again, brought to me by another Step 2 student. This one is actually in Virginia. And this one, we bought it for $150,000. This one is a bird deal. We got $40,000 in renovations and the ARV is going to be $265,000. So for this one, a Step 2 student found the deal. We had another Step 2 student fund the deal as equity partner. And the same person who found the deal is also going to be the manager of the deal. And so I'm the one who got the financing. So I got the loan on it. I got the purchase price. This one was not through my investor loan. I used a different Step 2 student who is a broker, who his name is Julian, like an amazing human being. He is now who I use for all my loans. And like fellow mastermind student, amazing human being. Like I consider him a friend. And so he helped me with the financing on this deal. And again, we got it for 90% loan to purchase and 100% of the purchase price. And again, that gap funding came from another Step 2 student who actually, instead of her being private money, we actually made her an equity partner in the deal. And so this one hasn't closed yet. This one is set to close within the next, probably the next 2 weeks. So again, that's why I only put the 150 on there, because it hasn't been appraised. So again, like at this point, the 265 is just an opinion, but we bought it for 150. So that's the number I put on there. So as you can see here, like these are both equity partnerships, but they're very different deals. And that's why I wanted to showcase this, because just because it's the same technique or strategy, there's still different nuances. There's still different ways to structure it. And so hopefully you guys are starting to see that there's just so many little nuances, that's why I'm showing you guys these deals as specifically as possibly can. That way you can start to look at deals a little bit differently, a little creative, instead of saying like, oh, I don't have that resource. It's like who can find the money? Who can find the deal? Who can get the funding? Who can be the manager, right? Okay. Next one, another equity partnership. Okay. And so this deal we bought in, this one is in Massachusetts. We bought it for $625,000. It's worth $625,000. Okay. This one was brought to me by, you guys, another Step 2 student, a different Step 2 student. And we got the financing on the deal. We raised the money. So we went and found the money. This person who came in as the money, they are an equity partner in the deal. And the person who bought the deal is also the one who's managing the deal. And so our responsibility in this deal is that we just got the financing on the deal. And so that property, again, pretty cool, because all we had to do was, again, we had to go find the money. Like we were responsible for finding the person who had the money, but again, we used somebody else's money and then we got the loan on it. And now we're up to $3.229 million for 2022. And this property is in Massachusetts. So let's talk about the next Murray Method deal. So this is the one that we just closed on last week. So this is a 7-plex. And so this property is the same seller on this property is the same one I did on the original Murray Method deal. Okay. So just to be clear on that, but it's a totally different situation. So this one, we bought it for $550,000 and it was worth $550,000. So the situation on this deal was that the Step 2 student had the 7-plex and he had hard money on this property and he couldn't get out of this hard money. He couldn't get refinanced into debt that amortized. And so he came to me and was like, hey, like, I need out of this deal. And it probably honestly wasn't worth $550,000, to be completely honest with you. But again, because we use Murray Method, we basically had an opportunity to say, try to prove it's worth $550,000. That way we could get the bank or the financer to basically give us that 25% of the loan purchase. Then we could turn that back around and figure out a strategy to get the seller out of the deal. Well, we tried lots of different ways and we couldn't quite figure it out. So I said, hey, like, I don't think there's enough equity in this deal for you to get out. But if you stay in this deal, I'll give you whatever the difference is between the 550 versus what his loan on it was, which was around $300,000. And you can, so he had another partner on this deal as well, that he paid him out. But I said, the only way I'll do this deal is if you actually stay inside this deal and continue to manage it. Because this one was in Laurel, which is not, it's about an hour and a half away from us. And so we made the deal. And we basically created a new entity and I bought it from him. And then I think I put down $78,000 on this. And then he refunded me the $178,000 a couple of days ago. And now we're 50-50 partners on this deal. And at this time, like, all I did was I put in the financing. I got the financing on the deal. It was his deal. Again, he technically funded it with his equity that we created through the lender. And then he's also managing it as well. And so this one was a pretty cool strategy. It was actually pretty hard to get the financing on it just because the property was a rural area. It was a sevenplex and it was a little beat up. So we got rejected by 12 lenders before we finally got someone to tell us yes. And the lender who I used was actually a college friend at a local bank right here in Bozeman. And so again, it was like pulling these little strings and it took us a lot of no's to get to a yes, but this deal was pretty cool. Because again, I have no money in the deal and we just acquired seven units and it cash flows about $1,000 a month. And there's actually lots of room to actually push the rents on it. So super excited about that. So now we're up to $3.779 million and we have one more property we're going to talk about. So if you guys are still here, let's go. This one is a really unique one. And so this one, we're actually closing on this one on Monday. So I put this one in there because the appraisal has already been done. Like, we got the clear to close. It's just a matter of now we're just waiting days. So I didn't count this one towards this because at this moment, I don't see anything that's going to stand between us on this and closing it. The appraisals come back. Lender said we're good to go. We just have a closing date set. So this one is a debt partnership plus equity partnership plus Murray Method. So I was brought this deal to me by, you guessed it. I'm going to keep repeating myself, another sub 2 student. This is a sub 2 plug. So, shout out Pace Morby, Laura Moby, everybody's in the sub 2 group. And he had this property that he had about $192,000 into it and he needed more money to finish it. Right. And so he told me that, hey, at the end of this, I think this property is gonna be worth about $405,000. I need about $75,000 in order to finish this deal. So I was like, okay. So I went out and I raised the $75,000. Okay. I brought that person in as a debt partner. And so they're, I don't remember the exact terms that they're getting, but they're getting a pretty good chunk now that we're getting closer to the end of it. So they're getting paid as a debt partnership. So once we pay them out, they'll be out. And then that person brought me the deal, he's going to stay as equity partner. And again, you can see here, the ARV, I actually said, hey, like, let's just push this. So I'm going to purchase it from you at 415 and let's just see if we can actually push these comps a little bit. And they end up appraising at 418. So we take that 415 is what our purchase price actually is. And we divide that by 75%. I think it's like 260. So that basically leaves about $60,000. And of course he has some closing costs and other things in there, but I said, there's probably about $40,000 left in there. And so we'll be able to buy this house with no money out of our own pocket. He'll refund me that, we'll refund that $75,000 to the private money lender. He'll get to pay back his initial private money lender or the money he had, that 192 back, and we'll have $40,000 sitting in there and we'll have a cash flowing property. So again, I didn't find this deal. I'm the one who got who's getting the financing on the long-term debt on this deal. And then the funding came from a private money lender. We're also doing Murray Method as well, because like all that money that 75 is going to get pushed back. And then we're getting the management of and then he's doing the management of the deal as well. So literally no money into this deal. And it's pretty cool. So that brings us up to $4.2 million of real estate we bought in 2022, not using any of our own money. So that's it, guys. Those are the seven strategies, the seven techniques that we use this year to buy real estate with none of our own money. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to stop the share of the screen here real quick. If I can do that. Let's start to check the chat a little bit. Okay. Everyone's still with me. It took us about an hour to do that. It's awesome. What do you guys think? Lots of stuff. I'm sure there's lots of questions. So if there is questions, also I'm going to ramble here just for another couple minutes. I will stay on here probably for the next half hour, answer some questions. I'm sure you guys have some questions. So if you guys can, like, raise your hand, you guys are in sub two, you guys know, raise your hand. If you guys don't know how to raise your hand, go down to the bottom of your little Zoom screen and hit the little reactions button, raise your hand. We'll start to answer some questions. But yeah, so hopefully you guys got some value from this and you learned some different strategies, some different techniques. And yeah, like excited to start to ask some, like answer some questions. Again, if you guys do have questions, raise your hand. We got Joshua Co coming in here real quick, and then I'll kind of check the chat. All right, let's start with Josh here. All right, my friend, go for it.
How do you actually, what's the nitty gritty details of how you actually find the partners, actually find the private money lenders? And like, that's kind of, you know, more of the strategy of actually how do you compile the deal together?
Yep. So if you go back to the beginning of my story, the reason I told the story is I think it's important to state that if you're going to raise money, like here are the questions you ask yourself. And these are the questions that I ask almost every single private money lender, right? It's like, I think about it from their point of view. Like what's the number one question that somebody who has money that they're giving to you, like, what are they asking themselves? Am I going to get my money back? Right? Like, am I going to get my money back? That's the one thing. They're not actually worried about what they're going to get on their money. They're not worried about, am I going to earn 10% or 10% or 12%? Like, am I going to get my money back? Right? It's the reason why people stick their money in the stock market or a 401k or an IRA, because it's like they get to take responsibility off of them and they get to put it onto the government, or they get to put it onto their employer, right? They don't want, like, people don't want responsibility. And so when you just understand that when they're looking for alternatives, that's like the biggest question is going in their head. Like, are you going to give my money back to me? Right? And so how can you display if you can get someone's money back? You prove it. You show it. You show it through your track record. You show that you are a functioning human being in the real estate space. And that's why I talk about the track record being the most important thing I learned from Chris, is that once I've done this 1, 2, 3 times, I can take it to you, Josh, and show you, here's my track record. Look at this property. Look how it's doing. Look how it's performing. And you're like, oh, you know what? I trust you because you've shown me, not just told me. Right.
How do you find people to like show, who are open-minded enough to actually want to maybe partner or want to, you know, basically invest in real estate? I mean, I know I've seen strategies where you can go on Facebook and friend people and stuff like that, but I was wondering if you could speak to that.
Yeah. So again, I want to be really upfront. Like, you must do the work on the front end. Like, you can't just say, I'm going to go raise money without actually having a track record, not having some experience, like not having some sort of ability to show that I'm going to be able to return your money. Okay. That's first and foremost. Once you have that, then it becomes a game, right? It becomes a game of prospecting and you literally getting on calls. Like, if you saw how many calls I got on, how many phone calls, how many people I connected with. And most of those aren't me asking for money. I'm just like getting curious about them. I'm just asking them questions like, hey, Kirk, old gym owner, like, what's going on? Like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing with, like, now that you're not doing in the gym, like, what are you doing now? Right? What are you doing with your money? Right? Like, Kirk can tell you, like, we've had multiple conversations and he would never like think of that conversation as me like raising money ever. Like, I never asked him for money. But when the time comes around and he actually is ready, he's like, who's he gonna reach out to? Right? Or if I just keep on reaching out to him, like, hey, I have this deal, right? And if he's in a position where he has money, you think he's gonna invest with me or invest with you, Josh, who we just met on a Zoom?
I'll invest with you.
Yeah. So it's multifaceted of, you need to be real. You need to actually do the work. But then secondly, it's just communicating and it's continued to show up in front of people. So if you get on my social media, like, you guys should all be following my social media. Like, I'm constantly talking about real estate. And as much as some people think that I'm doing it to show off, like, I really don't, like, I could not do this at all. I don't care about that. What I care about is people know I do real estate. So all of a sudden when you say, Logan, you know what? I've seen some of his posts. I know he does real estate. I've seen random ass people reach out to me about real estate, old gym owners, old people from college, because I post things about real estate. Right. So again, to answer your question is that you first must do the work. Second thing you must do is, you must communicate with people. You must continue to talk to them and you must develop a relationship with them. Get curious about them. Ask them their goals. So the two things they're asking, every single investor, like this is important. Every single investor is asking two questions. Are you gonna give my money back? Right? So return of capital. And then the second question is, like, return on capital. What can you actually give me back? Right? And then your question for them is like, what is your goal, right? Like, what is the goal for you? Are you trying to create income on this money? Are you trying to create wealth with this money? Do you want to park this money? Do you want to keep it flexible? And so based on that, you see that I have different strategies. And so I would say the one thing that I've took from both Chris and Pace that they actually are like total opposites on is like, Chris is only an equity guy. Like, he only wants people to do equity deals with him. And then Pace is very much like, I only want debt partners, right? Now that he's transitioned to multifamily, it's a little bit different because of equity. But before the multifamily thing, he was definitely like, I only want debt partners. Like, I don't want any equity partners. And so understanding that those are actually two different types of people. They're two different personalities and they're two different types of money. Equity is just parked money. Like, someone just says, I make a lot of money in my business, like, which is something that we did. We wanted that money parked. Like, I wasn't worried about making money on that money. I just wanted to park that money. I wanted to earn a nice return. I wanted to build some wealth behind it, but I didn't care if I made $200 on that money. Right. Now, the person who's like, we have other investors who have like $40,000 or $50,000, like, they're trying to make money on that money. Right. So they want that money more flexible. And they have a plan for like for the next year or two, after they earn, you know, 10%, 12% of the money, then they want to go maybe go do their own thing. So these could be other investors. These could be people who have other business opportunities. And so your number one goal is when you're talking to future investors is like, what is your goal? And then you can match up the deal with what they want, as long as you understand how to do that as well. Right. So there's different challenges to both. But there's also different pros and cons to doing equity versus debt. So, I think that's really it. So basically, if you just get really focused on your investor and you figure out what their goals are, and you can match up your investment with their goals, you'll win. That's like the framework behind it. And the tactical stuff is like, again, are they debt partners or the equity partners? And then like, we can get into I showed you so many different deals. Like, it really, like, every single deal is a little bit different. So we can get into the weeds of like, well, what's the percentage, right? Like, all the percentages are different. They're literally just based on the person and the situation. So that's your question, Josh.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I could ask a million questions. I'm going to let whoever's next go.
Cool. All right. Kirk, my boy, Kirk. What's up, my friend?
Hey, what's happening, Logan? Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday. This literally feels like gym launch. Like, when I used to coach all the daily calls in gym launch, like, Kirk was on there every single day. Like, Kirk is one of the most consistent people ever. And I love Kirk so much.
Hey, well, thank you, man. I really appreciate you doing this. It's great advice. My question is more around, when you get financing, like, how long are you taking the money out for? 15, 30 years. And then how does that factor into the rents of the properties and being able to cash flow on a property? Like, when you see a property, let's say it's $200,000, you know, 15 versus 30 year, taking the money out, it's definitely going to be a lower payment. But then how are you factoring that in to get a property where you can charge enough rent over that to cash flow per month?
Yep.
I guess that's a lot of questions in one.
No, it's good. I think it comes down to just underwriting the deal from, you basically have projections every single deal. So I always take like a worst case scenario. And when someone brings me a deal for $200,000, I know interest rates right now are around 7.2%, right? Like, that's what I got. That's what we got quoted on this deal that we're closing on next week. And so actually we'll put in about 7.5% as an interest rate. And then I'll basically run the numbers. Everything else you can pretty much get from either the seller, or you can get it from the county records. You can get taxes, you can get insurance. You can get a really good idea of what you want the payment's going to be. Right. And then from there, you have to, so that's one side of the equation. It's like, these are all your expenses. And for a single family home, it's really, really simple, right? You have taxes, insurance, a principal and interest, and then you have vacancy and you have repairs. And so all together, like, just allocate another 10% on top of your PITI. You have your rough monthly payment. Okay. So now you have your expenses. And then the second side of it is like, what's your income? And so depending on what strategy you're going to use, it's going to be dependent on your income. So if you do a strict long-term rental, you got to figure out what are the long-term rental rates in the area, right? And so if you're in the area, you probably have a good idea of what those rental rates are, or you can ask a real estate agent, or you get on Craigslist or Zillow, and you can actually just like do manual research. Or if you're going to rent as an Airbnb, there's tools that we use called, like, one of my favorite tools is called data.rabu. It's a free tool. You can use AirDNA. If you have other Airbnbs in the area, you can literally use your actual own comps as well. And so, like, those are like two of the main exit strategies that we primarily have used. You also do corporate rentals. We just interviewed a girl on our podcast on, my other podcast, my Ordinary podcast, we interviewed a gal who does what she calls impact housing, which is group homes. So she does assisted living. She does sober. She does mentally disabled housing as well. And so she shared a little bit of different strategies on that realm as well. And so those are different strategies, again, different business acumen, but ultimately you got to understand what your exit is going to be or what your, like what your play is going to be. So that way you can get an income number, right? So let's say that it's going to, like, all your expenses every single month are going to be $1,500. And then after you do your calculations for long-term rental, your income on it's going to be about $1,800. Okay. So you have $1,800, you have $1,400 expenses, you have about $400 of cash flow. And if you calculated that expenses with vacancies, repairs, and all that stuff in there, you have $400 of cash flow, how much did you put in, right? Like, what was your down payment? And then that's where you would get into, like, is it a good deal or not? Depends on, well, I put in $0, I'm making $400 a month. Is that a pretty good deal?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's a good deal. But if you had to put in, you know, $20,000, if you had put on $50,000 and you're making $4 a month, your cash on cash is going to be like 400 times 12 is 3,600 divided by 50. It's like, you know, like a 6% return. So, yeah, I would do that deal. Right. So that's how I would underwrite a deal is I always play worst case scenario. And then if it still makes sense, then I'll go through with it. If not, and also there's other little factors, like that's just like the first piece, like, is it a good area? Who's going to manage it? Is it probably going to appreciate, like, does it fit my long-term vision? And you can see my properties. Like, I don't have a ton of like lower properties. I think we had a couple $150,000 homes, but most of our stuff is in the $400,000, $500,000, $600,000, $700,000, $800,000 range because, that's the properties I like. Those ones that appreciate, those are the markets I like. So again, it just depends on your specific strategy as well.
Got it. What cash on cash, like what's the range you look for?
Yeah, it's going to like, your experience is going to dictate what you accept. It's like your, like what you tolerate, it changes, right? When you're like, when you first get into business, Kirk, you know, that's like your, like your toleration for clients is like, you'll do anything just because you need clients. And then as you get along the game, like you'll do nothing. It's the same thing when you have employees, right? When you have your first employee, like you let them get away with everything. And then eventually you get to the point where you might fire them because they look at you like this. And it's like what you tolerate is what you'll get. And so in the beginning, like those first couple of days I showed you, like I was happy with getting an 8%, 9%, 10% cash on cash. Like that's all I knew. Right. I thought that was good. Brandon Turner on Bigger Pockets told me 10% return, double digits. Like, that's great. I was like, cool, I'm doing that. And now I honestly won't look at anything less than 30%. I won't.
Oh, wow.
I don't care. Like, I won't look at it. I don't need to. Like, but when I look for those, like, guess what? Like, all those deals that I showed you, like, they fall in that 30% cash on cash. Right. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you.
For sure, man.
That was great.
Amazing seeing you, my friend.
Hey, great to see you too.
All right, Sean Bolden. What's up, Sean?
What's going on?
What's up, man?
Can you hear me good?
I hear you and I see you amazing.
All right. Hey, man, I appreciate this. This is great. I thank you for doing this. Yep. I just had pretty much, you know, when you was talking about the HELOC process, mm-hmm. You know, I'm kind of looking into that right now. I know me and my wife took out a cash out refi and did that with some of our properties and basically put it in for the rehab and
yep.
did the burr on some methods. So we're doing good on that. But as far as the HELOC, I think you mentioned about you don't take it out on your investment properties. Did you say that? I didn't.
So you will have a lot of trouble getting a HELOC, which is just a second lien from a bank on an investment property, right? Again, like I have one, so I know it's possible. I know other people who do have these, but they are the exception. They're not the rule, okay? You have to have a good relationship with the bank. They might want to collateralize other properties as well on top of that. So again, like there's different ways you can do it, but most banks will not give you a HELOC or a second on a property that's not a primary.
Okay. Right. That's understandable. Yeah, because I was looking at it where, you know, I got a couple sub two deals that I've been having for a year and I'm looking like, I want to take a HELOC out, you know, but I wanted to keep that interest rate where it's at, you know, yeah. So I didn't want to compromise anything.
Cool. Well, let me share one thing. Again, this is something that I didn't have to do, but I know one of the person who's actually done this. And so again, take it with a grain of salt. I've not done it. I want to put that full transparency. It's just something that if you guys are curious, you guys can ask if you have a good relationship with a lender, is if you guys do have a business, you could take a loan against your business and you could secure it with a piece of property. That's I've known people who have done that. I have not done it. So again, I can't speak to it exactly, but that is an avenue worth pursuing if you have like a lot of equity in a property. Again, most banks, that's just a policy, but they might give you a business loan and then use your property with tons of equity as a way to secure that business loan, just as another strategy.
I would love to talk about that sometime, because I got a property right now that I had for a lease option purchased, lease option with the option to buy it. And the only reason why I didn't do a sub 2 deal, because she had a 10% interest rate on 20 years. So it's pretty high.
Yeah.
So I've been paying it down, and now I'm at a point where I'm like, all right, we'll do the sub 2 deal. She has so much equity and all she wants is just a little bit of money down. So once I take it over, I'm like, all right, let's go after, you know, a HELOC, or even doing a cash out refi where I can only take that money out, just a little portion to pay her back on.
So one thing that we've done as well that might work for you is that, how much money do you need? Let's just say, again, I don't know what it is. Let's just say it's $20,000.
Yeah.
Go raise that money from a private money lender and then secure them in second position on one of your properties. We do that all the time. Right. So a bank won't let you secure it, but you can get James Gamble, who said, hey, I have $20,000 I want to invest, and if you give me 12% interest, I'll do that. I'll do second position on a property that has 100, 150, a substantial amount of equity in it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. I see why you got 4 million. Okay. Yeah.
We just did that. We literally just did that. We had a property that one property that, I don't know if you guys saw that one property that we spent, we have $240,000 of our own money in there. That's a whole separate story, but the bank made us put on 40% on that deal in order for us to get it. It was like, oh my God, this is so frustrating. Yeah. That was December of 2021. I'm like, okay, like in 6 months, I'm going to refinance that. I'm going to refinance it. And that was May of this year. And so the rates literally, like when I went to look at it, it was like 5.5%. We got like a 3.65% interest rate. I was like, okay, I'm just going to wait for them to come back down. And they never came back down. And so now I'm sitting at, you know, it's like sitting at 7%. I have all this equity sitting in there. And I was like, shit, I have like all this equity. And so somebody wanted to give me $150,000. So I just secured them in second position on that property. And again, they see all this equity in there. They feel safe, secure. And instead of me having to lose that 3.65, I just have a temporary private money loan on there that I get to dictate those terms, and I get to keep my 3.65 first position loan on there. So
okay. I think that's the best bet for me to go. Yeah. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Sure did. Chris, what's up, my dude?
How you doing, Logan?
I'm doing amazing.
All right. Got a question on the line of credit. So I haven't purchased any properties yet. We're trying to get everything lined up. We're ready. We're pretty much just about ready to jump in and get moving. So I've got from my previous business, before joining Sub 2, one of my locations was completely paid off. And so I went and got a line of credit against that location.
Perfect.
Now, my question is just changeable from what you just said. So when you made the comment about the loan against your business or house, whatever, is that different than a line of credit? Because, you know, the line of credit, it has to be paid off fairly fast. You know, you can't have it out for, you know, a year plus or whatever. Is that different? Is that meaning what you're meaning is a line of credit?
So when I was speaking to the line of credit, is that the one I have is a second position line of credit that is against the property. So that's the one I have. The one I somehow with the business, like again, that's not something that I currently have. I just said I know somebody who has that. So again, I wasn't speaking to that per se from the standpoint of I do that. The one I have is a second position line of credit against a property that I own. And that is it's a variable interest rate. And I'm technically supposed to pay it off once a year, but then it basically is as long as I basically the way that the banker told me, as long as I have it paid off for at least like 5 days a year, they'll automatically continue to renew it. So worst case scenario, I have to go, I got to borrow some money to pay it off for 5 days. And then I basically can reopen it back up and pay that person back and continue doing what I'm doing.
Okay. Okay. Well, that was going to be my main question is, what can I use this line of credit for, since you can't have it out for too long? You know, can I utilize this to, you know, buy and hold?
If you have a good enough deal, I would say it's definitely riskier if you use it as buy and hold. I prefer the line of credit. So just to make it clear, like that $40,000 we use on line of credit, we end up paying that back. And so now our line of credit is sitting there. We have $100,000 just sitting there. So like I use it temporarily. You can use it longer term, like our HELOC. We're using it longer term because it does pay down. So again, it just depends on your risk tolerance. It depends on how good you are making money. Like if you're in business and you're good at making money, then you might have a little bit more tolerance for risk than somebody who has a 9-to-5 job who can't, you know, snap their fingers and make $15,000-$20,000. Mm-hmm. So again, I hate to give advice. I don't know your situation. I don't know your personality. I don't know how, like, I don't know your skills. Right. But if you're going to make money, then you can take a little bit more risk.
Now, when you say you paid it off, the 40,000 one, was that when you refinanced or?
Yeah. So we literally just kept on moving money around. Right. So okay. We just kept moving money around and that 40,000. So that our HELOC. So again, we bought the property. We actually used our HELOC to pay that off. And then we refinanced it. We like moved money around from different properties to pay out that $40,000. And now our HELOC is open again.
Okay. Okay. See, I was actually thinking about, you know, I won't be able to do that right at the beginning because we won't have enough homes to do that. But yeah, I was kind of thinking the same thing where once you have enough homes or properties, then just cash out refi, pay it off, and then start all over again. So, okay. Okay.
And as a second to that, there's, if you guys watch Pace, there's also a different phases in your business. So like when you're first getting started, you're trying to buy as much as you possibly can. You're probably not trying to use as much money as you possibly can, but then there's another phase where you come back behind and you're making enough money. You're doing cash refinances. And instead of maybe buying a new property, you're actually paying off an existing property. Right. So sometimes it's not always just growth. Sometimes it's like, okay, let me pay off some of this debt. And you basically increase your net worth without going through the hassle of going through a loan process, buying your property, having more tenants. So there's different phases. And I think it's important for everyone to understand that like I watched Pace and he paid off all of his private money lenders. And so I'm like, oh, maybe the next phase for us is like, instead of acquiring, you know, another $4 million of property in 2023, maybe our goal is that we just need to start paying down some of these debts, right? And we need to start looking at different strategies. And that's just like me just thinking out loud. That's not necessarily our plan, but it's just a different strategy, just depending on where you are.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Great. Appreciate that.
Cool.
Got it.
Yeah. And that's awesome. So, and just to be clear, for anyone's who like maybe is a little bit confused. So Chris has a paid off property. And so when your property is paid off, any bank will do a second or will do a first position on investment property, right? So if there's no debt on that property and it's an investment property, they will do a line of credit or they'll do a note on it, but they won't do most likely they won't do a second. But if you have a paid off piece of property, you can do those all day long. Okay. Looks like we got maybe one more question. James, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
What's going on, my friend?
Not much, man. Thanks for holding this Zoom. Really appreciate all the knowledge you're sharing with us.
Yes, sir, man. What's going on?
My question was in regards to your own evaluations of deals, as well as when you're pitching to potential equity partners. Is it strictly just the cash on cash return that you're taking into consideration, or do you consider like the depreciation and everything else that goes along with it?
Correct. Yeah. I just saw a comment in the comments, Julie's in the comments. She got me this cool water bottle. So thank you, Julie. Look at that. It's pretty sick. It's pretty sick. This thing, I use this thing every single day. Julie's a stud. So if you guys don't know who Julie is, she's in Idaho, closest to Boise. I think that's the place that most people know. So give her some love, definitely connect with her. But to answer your question, James, yes, the answer to your question is yes. Like you take an account for everything. Again, depends on the investor. But for me, like, cause I'm basically the filter between the deal and the investor. And I'm basically the one who I see myself as the coach, right? So like, I don't want to be on the field. I don't want to be out there playing again. Like right now I'm playing a lot in the financing game just because that's an asset that I have. And it's like a lot of work for a short period of time, but then after the deal closes, I don't have to manage the deal. I don't have to, again, it's not my money in the deal. I'm not out there going and finding more deals, but I prefer to be the coach. And so my goal is just to, how do I find the best players? How do I find the best deal with the best investor and get us all on the same page? So once it's usually the deal finder comes to me with a deal. And that's the kind of like my first sniff test is like, is there enough meat on this bone for us to go around to all of us? And usually that 30% is like a good, it's a good filter of just saying like, there's not enough to like even ask about, well, if we use depreciation, is it going to appreciate? Can we make more money on this? So, but those are all questions we do end up asking. And one of the properties that we bought in Massachusetts, the investor, the reason why he liked it was that it was a great cash on cash, like 40%+ cash on cash. But he's someone that makes a ton of money in his business. So he wants to park the money, right? That's his number one goal. He wants to park money. But then because he makes so much money, he also wants to use the depreciation to put that against his income. So depreciation was actually pretty big. And in our conversation with him about investing in this deal, he's like, hey, as long as we can do a depreciation, the accelerated depreciation with this property, then the calculation makes sense for me to be at this equity percentage. I was like, cool, done.
Gotcha. Yeah. So it just depends on the investor.
Always just depends, right? And when you guys are watching my story, so I want to show you guys so many different deals because every single deal is so nuanced that I wish it was just like black and white and just like this, and this, but everything is nuanced. But when you guys understand the strategy, you guys can start to like, the fun part is of being creative and just saying, oh, you know what? You're not calculating depreciation. So like, James, like your cash on cash is, you know, as a whole, you know, like the deal is 30, you know, let's say this specific deal, like it was 40 some percent, like his percentage of the deal was 20%. But when he added in the depreciation that he was going to get that he would save in paying taxes, all of a sudden it went up from 20% to like 30%. He's like, okay, that's a good deal. Right.
And how do you figure that, like, as far as like to break that down, do you just figure like the annual depreciation as part of the cash on cash?
So you can do like a quick sniff test on depreciation. If you use accelerated depreciation, you can take the total purchase price divided by, it's either 40 or 60. It's one or the other one. And that's what you get as an expense the very first year, and then divide that up against your equity partnership, and you'll say, I can take $50,000 as an expense against my income. Like that's how we did it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I'm trying to get a big portfolio deal right now. And like the initial cash on cash isn't that great, but it's like 130 houses. So I just figured for somebody, the depreciation's got to be, you know, enticing. Yeah. But
here's the problem with portfolio. So I'll address the depreciation issue first, but then the problem with portfolios in general, I hate portfolios. The reason being is that you have 130 problems. Like let's say there are 130 doors. I love 130 doors if they're all in the same area, because you have, you know, one property, you can have one person manage those, but 130.
Well, these are like all in the same town. Yeah. Same county.
Well, same county. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's not the like,
but not
the same actual property. So that means you have 130 deeds. You have 130 insurances. Right. Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's such a pain in the ass. That's a big problem with portfolios. Second problem with portfolios from a depreciation standpoint is that you can't you have to depreciate every single property individually. And so just so you guys know, like when I did my cost segregation, so how you do depreciation is used a cost segregation study. If you guys actually are curious, like I do have a company who I use and they were great. And you guys reach out to me and I'll give you the contact info. And they charged about, I don't remember, $3,500 or $4,000, somewhere in there, $3,000 to $4,000 for that cost seg, right? So again, now you got to factor that into the cost of what you're going to save on taxes as well. So you don't just do it just to do it, but if you're actually going to pay a certain amount of taxes, you take that minus what your cost segregation would be and you say, okay, well, I'm going to net this number. So we actually did use it in 2021. So that one of the properties that we bought, we did a cost segregation on it. It was $580,000 we bought it for. I think we got a depreciation expense for like $120,000. And it went from us paying like $40,000 or $50,000 in taxes at the end of the year to literally we got a refund. So it was worth the $3,000 to us.
Gotcha.
And just as another side note, I know it wasn't asked, but that accelerated depreciation, it goes away in 2022 for the full amount, right? You can't you can't take the full amount after 2022. And then in 2023, it's like 80%. And then next year after that, it's 60% and 40%. And, you know, it could eventually be gone. So if you do have opportunities to depreciate some properties, accelerate, you know, why am I spacing it? Accelerate that appreciation on some of these properties. Do it now.
Do it right. Now. Yeah. Right on. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yep. Cheryl, hit the gym. Hit the gym, girl. Look at that. Do the gun show. Come on, Cheryl. Awesome, James. Rob, what's going on? Rob's been hitting the gym.
What's going on, Luke? How you doing, man?
What up, man?
Thanks for this, by the way. This is awesome hearing your story and everything. Like, how fucking crazy is that? That the first thing you dump money into is Alex Hormozy. Pretty wild shit. I think you kind of hit this, actually. But I've looked at a bunch of deals. I went and did the HELOC thing and have some money sitting on the side. But nothing feels right when I go to pull the trigger. Yeah. I'm just wondering, is it at the end of it, at the end of the day, do you just kind of get to a point where you're like, okay, I ran the numbers. It feels, the numbers make sense. Fuck it. Or what is like that made you take that first leap?
So two things. The benefit of a HELOC is that you don't pay anything for it to sit there. That's one of the biggest benefits of HELOC. That's why I think everyone, if they have the opportunity or they have access, and when I say access, I mean, they have equity, you should go get a HELOC, because outside of the $500 to $1,000 that it costs to set it up, like, it doesn't cost you anything to just sit there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Second, to answer your question more directly, is when I wanted to buy real estate, I was like, I want to buy real estate. It was 2015. We didn't buy our first property till 2019. Right. So it took me 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had those same hesitations. I had opportunities before that to buy properties and I didn't. And it never quite felt right. And so I think it's, when it comes to making decisions that are uncomfortable, you have to really get good at understanding, like, trusting your intuition. First off, like, you need to trust your intuition, but you also need to, like, be really real with yourself. Is like, is this a fear thing? Or is this like a, I'm pretty sure this is not the right move thing. And that's where really relying on your intuition is really important. And like I told you guys earlier, when I gave $10,000 to Alex after 2 days of like seeing him on the internet, I trust my intuition. Right. But I also trusted the fact that, like, it didn't matter if he was a scammer or not. Like, I believed in myself. I was like, I connected the dots, and like, I was going to take responsibility regardless of whether it turned out to be in my favor or not. Like, it was on me. It was on him at that moment. Same thing when I did the same with Chris Krohn. Like, after 2 weeks of watching my YouTube, I gave the guy $35,000, right? We ended up giving him another $65,000 like a month or two later. Nice. And it was literally just like, I trusted myself. And ironically, with Chris, we actually were on a, there's actually like a miscommunication on what the, like, the next $65,000 we gave him, like, what that program was. And so we got to a situation where, like, there was actually a moment I was like, I think we actually might lose this $100,000. But at the end of the day, like, I didn't get mad at them. I was just like, well, this is on me. Like, if I lose $100,000, it's on me. Right. And then, and the same thing with Pace, and the same thing, any other thing I've ever invested in, I've always put the responsibility on myself. So I think that takes a lot of the power out of externals, right? Like, mm-hmm. the economy or the house or tenants or whatever it may be, and just like, it's on me. And I find a lot of peace at that. Like, I don't really care if something, like, it will, like, what outcomes are. I just care about my reaction to the outcomes.
Nice. One follow-up to that. So for those seven deals you did this year, or was that like your whole last couple of years?
I showed you seven different strategies. I think we actually bought, I don't know how many deals it was total. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 different deals, but seven different strategies.
So those all sound like pretty interesting deals, and a lot of things had to come together for you. What I was wondering is, how many deals would you say you actually looked at, underwrote, and that fell through? Or were you pretty selective in those things? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, like truthfully, you should see how many deals I get every single day. Like, most of them are just garbage. Again, the reason why that 30% sniff test that James was talking about is just, I gotta have a filter. And so that's what I use as my first filter. And then some of them make it past that point. And yeah, we've actually had lots of deals fall through that, you know, that we got under contract, we did more due diligence for whatever reason, like they didn't go through. So yeah, like those were, I just showed you the deals that were successful. There was more than 11 deals that we, that did not go through, that either looked at or we had under contract for sure. Mm-hmm.
Cool. Yeah. All right, man. Thanks again.
100%. Yeah. It's a great question, Rob. What I think it's important to bring it up is that, these are the highlights, guys. And most of you guys are in real estate. Most of you guys are in business. Like, you guys know that it's not like, this is the reason why these are highlights is because they're a small piece of the portion. Like, the majority of it is grinding. It's like problems. Like, I could go back and show you all the problems I have with every single one of those properties right now. Every single one of them has a problem of some sort right now that I could share with you. But again, I choose to focus on like, what is the positive of this property? Like, what's it going to do in the long term? And I think ultimately that's what keeps me at peace, is that I'm playing the long game. So if we lose a couple thousand dollars this month, we have one property where we have an extra $50,000 expense that we were not expecting. That one is one of the bigger ones, but I was like, screw it. Like, it's okay. It's a short blip on the timeline that we're going to hold this property forever. And the benefit is that property is supposed to cash flow a ton. So it's part of the game. And the longer horizon you have. So one of the things, if you guys don't listen to Alex, the reason why I recommend him so much is because he talks about playing the long game. He's like, the longer game you can play, the easier chance you have to win, right? Everyone's trying to win today. Like, what happens if you make a goal that you want to make $10,000 today and you don't make $10,000, right? You get upset, you get mad. You're like, I only made $5,000. But if your goal is to make $10,000 the next year, like, how easy is that? And so sometimes you have to set expectations realistically, but also like play a different game. Like, I play a different game and I choose to make money in the future rather than making a lot more money today. And it's the reason why I don't do any flipping. I don't do any wholesaling. I literally just buy and hold property because I'm playing the long game. And to be completely transparent too, like, I have other income sources that don't come from me buying and selling real estate. So like, if that was my game, that's a totally different thing, but it hasn't ever been my game. So like, all the properties that I bought, I've only ever sold one property. And the only reason that I sold that property is because it was a seller finance deal and the note was coming due and we either could refinance it or we could sell it. And it was the house we lived in. So we got to basically take home like $240,000 tax-free. And I was like, let's do that. Let's just take that money off the table. So cool, guys. Appreciate you guys. Thank you guys for hopping on here. Hopefully you guys can die from this. And yes, so you guys, I will send the email recording out for this. So you guys, if you guys want the recording, I'll send it out to you probably tomorrow or the next day. I'll have my assistant do all the show notes and make it real nice and pretty. And yeah, so again, if you guys got some value from it, please let me know. Again, the only thing I ask, if you guys want to do something cool, is I'm really trying to push my podcast right now. So everything goes my way. It's my podcast. It's like me just talking to the me talking on the phone. I'm telling stories about the gym, about my gym days. I'm telling stories about real estate days. I'm talking about days that are coming. I have a cleaning business as well. I'm talking about marriage, kids, all the fun stuff. And yeah, they're about 15-20 minutes. They're for entrepreneurs. So if you're an entrepreneur and you want to hear entrepreneur stories, like, that's what it is. Everything Goes My Way is the podcast. It's on Apple, it's on Spotify, it's on Castbox. If you guys want to, go follow it. If you like it, you can do a review, you can share it with somebody. But that's it. I appreciate you guys so much. Chris, Sean, Rick, Randy, Kurt, Rob, Ryan, you guys are the pretty faces I see. But thank you guys for your support. Thanks for being on here. Again, if you have any questions, hit me up on Instagram or inside the Facebook group. But happy Wednesday, guys. Bye.